Blog Talk Radio.
WPR Rebuttal is on the air. Welcome to WPR Rebuttal, covering the sides of the story missed by Wisconsin Public Radio, bringing a narrative to UW System Board of Regents won't allow, shedding light on perspectives the owners of WPR don't want you to hear. I'm your host, Senator JPO. Subject today is the U.S. District Judge in Manhattan, New York, ruled on yesterday, which was a Thursday, that was May 23rd, 2018, that all Twitter users have a constitutional right to view and read firsthand every tweet by the U.S. President. So I was looking for the actual court case itself, and it's interesting because none of the news outlets give a name for the court case. And needless to say, I spend most of my time preparing for job interviews, so it's not like I have the time to go and do that because, if any of you want me to go and track down a court case, I mean, send me like $500 via PayPal. But I ain't doing it until I have the money rolling in and I can, In fact, when I do get a real job, I won't even have the time to do that. So if you want that information, you better pay me now. Otherwise, it's never going to be found out. And actually, personally, I don't care enough to find out my own because I'm working on a book about higher education. And whether President Trump's his tweets are protected or not, that has no bearing on my research in higher education. So I'm just doing this as a topic today because it's very recent and it's a big deal, and I believe I'm going to get some new viewers and expand my audience here by talking about the constitutional right to view President Trump's tweet history. So I usually don't read articles verbatim, but today I may as well because it's Reuters reporter Brett. So that was my phone signal going out. If there's any dead time, that was because my phone cut out. You see, Blog Talk Radio is just a conference line that you call in, and then others can call in that conference line as well. And then you have that conference line for up to half an hour, depending on your plan. Like, I'm on the freemium, which means I can do half an hour at a time, but only one episode at a time as well. So if I wanted to, I could do half an hour every day, but it's just too much work. It's hard enough doing half an hour every week. And just today, when I logged in, I was all ready to go. I had written out my description for this episode. And then while I'm copying and pasting the description, you know what Blog Talk Radio tells me? It's too damn long. So now I'm thinking, okay, what do I cut out? And the time is ticking down here. And finally, I determined that when you add a hyperlink to your description, in case I wanted to send a link to the Reuters article that I'm going to read, well, Blog Talk Radio counts the hyperlink as part of the length. So I had to cut out the hyperlink. But on the bright side, I'm going to read directly. That's my phone alarm going off. Okay, so I got my phone alarm off. I'm pretty sure you didn't hear it on the conference line, but I heard a beep. Okay, so now I'm reading the letter out, not the letter, but the article, and I'm going to provide a link through my Blogger platform, which is different than Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio, in order to discourage people from using it like a blog, they limit your description. And the last time I counted, because I was in a hurry to just trim down my description, but my original description was over length by nearly 300 characters. So based on the acceptable length that I finally had was within the length by 50 characters, I'm going to say that altogether, the entire length in the description is no more than 500 characters. Because it, my description, as originally written, was not that long, but Blog Talk Radio said it was overwhelmed by 300 characters. So it's around 500 characters limit for the description. Now, my blogger platform is something that I have to update for previous podcasts as well, because usually I have just enough time to prepare a new podcast, and then my time is all sucked up into these other things, such as following up on the other job applications that I have out there. And I like to comment too on WPR, although they banned one of my accounts. I was able to resume posting under the different account. So it took down Senator JPO, but I put in a new account, Senator JPO's Revenge. And I seem to rank pretty highly already, and that's because I always upvote myself. And that's why my comments appear above those who have a comparable number of upvotes. And I tried to use my old account to upvote me as well, but WPR.org does not recognize upvotes from the same IP address. Whereas if you go to a website such as tpww.net, which is a people's wrestling website, it does recognize upvotes from the same IP address. Okay, so now I've got into all the minutiae as to why I don't do a weekly podcast here, because I'm sure I have a lot of new listeners here. They're just chomping at the bit here. And they're asking, Senator JPO, when are you going to get to what you describe in your subject line? When are you going to talk about the constitutional right to view President Trump's tweet history? Well, you see, it's not a bait and switch, because I will get to that. I have 27 minutes remaining. But what I want to do first is just introduce you to how I run my blog and my podcast, which is, I originally wanted to be doing this mostly as a blog, but it turned mostly into a podcast because I wanted to improve my speaking skills. And I will definitely say I have far fewer verbal pauses. I have much better coherence of thought when I speak because I've practiced thinking on the fly as I speak. Because it used to be I would speak and I'd pause and try to think what to say next and I'd speak again. Now I can speak and think at the same time much more smoothly than I did prior to starting this podcast 2 years ago. I launched WPR Rebuttal on April 26, 2016. And we usually don't have that many callers, but if you want to call in, you're welcome to dial 929-477-3965. If you have any of your own opinions as to whether the U.S. President's tweets should be constitutionally protected as visible to everyone around the world, or if you believe that the president should have his right to privacy respected by being able to block people who post abusive material or just try to troll him, then either way, whatever your opinion, dial 929-477-3965. Okay, so now I'm getting to a Reuters article. Again, it's written by Brandon Pearson. Trump's blocking of critics on Twitter violates U.S. Constitution, U.S. judge. That was posted May 23rd, 2018. Okay, so this alarm on my phone keeps on going off. I'm going to have to maybe cut out a bit to turn it off. Alarm has been switched off. Okay, that's good. This is written by Brendan Pearson. His last name is P-I-E-R-S-O-N. He's a reporter for Reuters. And he wrote, a U.S. judge in New York on Wednesday ruled that President Donald Trump may not legally block Twitter users from his account. Okay, so I have to go back in the description. I had on May 23rd, well, actually Wednesday was May 22nd. So hoo-ha for that. No big deal. Because so long as I don't change the title, which I won't, I don't need to change the title. The URL that you use to get to this podcast page will be the same. So I just have to change that to May 22nd. 2018. Continuing on, Brendan writes, Trump has made his @ Real Donald Trump Twitter account, an integral and controversial part of his presidency, using it to promote his agenda, announce policy, and attack critics. He has blocked many critics from his account, which prevents them from directly responding to his tweets. Well, I should stop right there and just say there is a difference between being able to read and being constitutionally allowed to read, okay, that information, and having a constitutional right to have one's response to it to be heard. And, wow, this is actually like 5 years ago, but in like August 2013, Rush Limbaugh had an article that, or in a radio segment that were both titled, "There is no constitutional right to be heard." That's pretty interesting. That's coming full circle now in late May 2018. So continuing on with the Reuters article, Brendan Pearson writes, U.S. District Judge Naomi Reese Buchwald in Manhattan ruled the comments on the president's account and comments of other government officials were public forums, so that blocking Twitter users for their views violated those users' right to speech under First Amendment of the Constitution. Eugene Volokh, who is a University of California in Los Angeles law professor, said the decision's effect would reach beyond President Trump. Quoted, he said, it would end up applying to a wide range of government officials throughout the United States, unquote. U.S. Department of Justice is representing Trump in the case. And the DOJ said, we respectfully disagree with the court's decision and are considering our next steps. So Twitter, Inc., which is traded under a ticker symbol TWTR on NASDAQ, said it's not a part of the lawsuit, so it will not comment on the ruling. Judge Buchwald's decision was in response to a First Amendment lawsuit filed by the Knight First Amendment Institute at Columbia University. Okay, so that is spelled K-N-I-G-H-T, First Amendment Institute, within Columbia University. And there are also several individual Twitter users represented on the docket as plaintiffs. And those included Phil Cohen, a sociology professor at University of Maryland, included Holly Figueroa, a political organizer and self-described songwriter from Washington State, and included Brandon Neely, a police officer from somewhere in Texas. It doesn't say what city he's from, but... Okay, so sociology professor Phil Cohen should not be confused with Mike Cohen, because Mike Cohen is one of President Trump's lawyers. So this Phil Cohen guy, the sociologist, complained that he was blocked in June 2017 after he posted a photoshopped image of Trump. And he had nothing to say. Who else? Well, okay, so Reuters does not distinguish that these were not plaintiffs, but these are just people who are not named on the docket, because I looked it up, and these people are not in the docket as plaintiffs. They're just various celebrities who complain about Trump blocking them, but they did not sue in the U.S. District Court of Manhattan. So Stephen King and Anne Rice, they're horror novelists. They complain that Trump blocked them, and Rosie O'Donnell, Chrissy Teigen, Marina Sirtis, and there aren't too many high-profile people who complain. I mean, they went into the B-listers pretty quickly there. I think, what was it? Yeah, there aren't any A-listers who complained of Donald Trump blocking them. So it goes to show you that only the B and C-listers complained about President Trump blocking them. And that's because President Trump only wants to be around the best company. He doesn't want to hang around with, what, who is Marina Sirtis? I guess, according to Reuters, she's an actress, I mean, but she's not well-known. I mean, maybe if Jennifer Lawrence had complained about Trump blocking her, but no, I mean, she never did. And that's why Reuters doesn't have any really famous people on there. Not that I think Lawrence looks that great. I'm just saying that she'd be amongst the better known. And yeah, if anyone from the Harry Potter series, like Daniel Radcliffe or Emma Watson, were to complain, or let's say Tobey Maguire, Spider-Man fame, if you were to complain about President Trump blocking him, you know Reuters would have mentioned it. But no, none of those A-listers are in the Reuters article. Just a bunch of nearly forgotten people. Okay, so Judge Buchwald rejected the argument by the Justice Department, which was Trump's own First Amendment rights allow him privacy and a freedom to block people with whom he did not wish to interact. So the judge wrote, "We must recognize and are sensitive to the president's personal First Amendment rights. However, he cannot use those rights in a way that infringes upon the First Amendment rights of those who wish to criticize him." Now, get this. In my opinion, this is the most important part of the ruling. Okay, so in the Reuters article, it says, President Trump can still mute users, which means their tweets will not appear in his notifications feed. In other words, if he wanted to, President Trump could still go to the profile of his critics, and he could still look at their tweet history and read all the tweets that they made about him, but he's not obliged to have their junk clutter up his Twitter feed. And that's what happens when you mute someone on Twitter, is you remove them from your notifications so they don't fill up your feed with whatever spam they're trying to litter your feed with. Okay, so continuing on, Duke University law professor Stuart Benjamin said he disagrees with the ruling. He finds that the Twitter feed should not be a public forum for purposes of First Amendment considerations. And Professor Benjamin said that in order for that to be legally recognized as a public forum, he would expect an express statement to that effect by the U.S. government. And here's a quote from law professor Stuart Benjamin from Duke University. He said, if Donald Trump is giving a speech to 100 handpicked people and one of them heckles him, then he gets to throw that heckler out. Now, that's the end of his quotation, but Judge Buchwald saw otherwise, and she said, well, any tweet by a government official is comprised of public forum. Anyone should be able to read it and respond to it. And conversely, though, she did not actually order President Trump to unblock anyone. So there's no legally enforceable order on our president to unblock anyone. And time will tell how many people he does unblock. Like, that'll be interesting to do a follow-up podcast on. Like, how many people did Trump unblock? And really, only our president knows that himself. Maybe his social media manager, which, according to this article, he does have a social media manager. And I'm reading through it again to find out just who that is. Okay, Dan Scavino is President Trump's social media director. So both he and Trump use that Real President Trump Twitter account, and only those two know exactly how many people they've blocked and precisely how many they'll unblock, if any. And really, I believe so long as the people can read the tweets, they don't necessarily have a right to tweet back. And that's the end of the Reuters article. I'll just put it that way. This is the start of my own commentary. Okay, so you heard the Reuters article. I read a lot of excerpts from it while remaining within the fair use clause of U.S. copyright law, because I read it out loud for critique and commentary. And my opinion here as a host, as Senator JPO, and if you listeners have any information that you want to contribute, you're welcome to call in at 929-477-3965. But my opinion here as a host of this WPR Rebuttal podcast is that anyone can log out of Twitter and read President Trump's tweets. So anyone who's blocked, easily log out, and they can read his tweets. Because if you go on Twitter, President Trump has a public account. some people, by comparison, other people will go and set their account to private. Okay? And when your account is sent to private, that means you cannot read any of your tweets unless they accept you as a follower. So all these people who complain about being blocked by President Trump, all they have to do is log out of their account. And they can read all his tweets. Because guess what? When your profile is set to public, as is President Trump's profile, all the tweets are visible unless you're logged into a blocked account. So just log out of your blocked account and problem solved. The people do not need to launch a lawsuit. They're just time wasters. And the only people who really won in that case are the lawyers. They're the only ones who are guaranteed to win in any lawsuit, okay, in any court case. The only people who win decisively are the lawyers in the grand scheme of things. Because guess what? Even when the plaintiffs win or defendants escape a penalty, there's always a chance for an appeal. But the lawyers' fees that are paid for those services rendered, those fees cannot be appealed. They're already pocketed, and they're put in a lockbox. So that's why I say the only surefire winners in any legal action are the lawyers. Okay, so we already established that anyone who's blocked on Twitter can just log out of their blocked account and read the tweets from the plain view of the public. They can just Google and do an internet search for the Twitter handle of whoever had blocked them, and then they can just read their entire tweet history. No problems. Now, what about the right to respond? Well, there we have, again, the option where Twitter is not an exclusive platform for responding to tweets. It's not. You can actually respond to tweets by making a blog post about it. You can repeat the tweet. You can copy the text verbatim, okay, after you view it from outside your account, copy the text of the tweet, put it in your own blog post, and put your responses next to those tweets. And that's how you do it. You just make a blog post. Anyone can get a blog, and I mean absolutely anyone. You don't even have to be an American citizen if you want to go and blog about President Trump's tweets. But, oh, he blocked you. Well, log out of your blocked account. Copy and paste the content of the tweets that you want to critique. Then just put together your thoughts in a blog post, and the search engine traffic will take interested people to you when they Google the content in that tweet, even if they just Google a fragment of it, a phrase maybe, a hashtag. Chances are they'll wander onto your blog page. Yeah. If you use the right hashtags, like I use, I hashtag every single series of words in my Twitter account. I hashtag the heck out of my tweets, okay? So when people do search by hashtag, chances are my tweets will appear. That's not just on Twitter. That's also for Google, Bing, and other search engines. And if you just think wisely about it and you just write your blog post with search engine optimization in mind, then you don't need to tweet directly because they will stumble upon your information anyway when they Google for responses to their information, because you're quoting them and you're adding your own hashtags and your own content alongside their content within your own blog post. I know that was a real roundabout way and highly pedantic, but hey, you know, it's obvious those people with the lawsuit couldn't figure it out for themselves. So I thought that me, with my limited occupational prestige, just an unemployed guy with a podcast, hey, I figured how amazing would it be if I mansplained it to them, right? And I just told you all, and I'll put the walkthrough on my blog post for his podcast, okay? That's all you have to do. Just Google for the tweets that you couldn't see because you were blocked. Make sure you've already logged out in your blocked account when you Google, okay? And then as a member of the public, outside of anyone's account, you can read President Trump's tweets Then you can copy and paste any tweets that you want to reply to, then compile those into a blog post and just intersplice your own remarks between the tweets. That's all you have to do, and then the whole public will be able to see your blog post. And then you can tweet it to other people, not necessarily the president himself, but word gets around, okay? And if you're really, really good at blogging, then maybe Reuters itself will go and write about your blog post. And when it hits the mainstream media like that, then it's nearly impossible to avoid the president getting wind of it. So there you go. Even if President Trump does not unblock you, I just mansplained how to get your perspective out there on the internet. Okay. Well, I covered that topic pretty well. And there aren't any callers on the dashboard. Going to do everyone a big favor, and I'm going to make one final call out here, one final shout out for callers, and that's 929-477-3965, and I'll be on the line for about 30 more seconds to give you time to dial in. But otherwise, next show is going to be on Thursday. The time is going to be 12:30 Central. So if you live on the East Coast, that's going to be 1:30 in the afternoon. If you live on the West Coast, that's going to be 10:30 in the morning. And I'm getting myself a cup of coffee because right now it's approaching 1 o'clock Central Time where I'm at right now. So I have a lot more to do. I think I might have a few more minutes left. I'm just going to cut off early because we don't have any callers, and I really exhaustively covered our subject matter. So, Senator JPO signing off.